All right. This is a process Q&A group, which means that it's an opportunity to be facilitated around something specific in your practice that you want to be trained with, and or it's a group where we can process the assignment that we've just been doing, which is actually an excellent place to do process Q&A. Mm-hmm. So, Judy.
I've been waiting for this.
You've been waiting for this. Okay.
So I see this process that's almost universal and that in all different areas. So the first, I'm really enthusiastic about something. Just can't wait. Whether it be a person, I love them, an activity, a hobby, anything, everything. And then over time, it ends up hating it. You know, there's just points along the way, and then I can't wait to get out of it. I mean, it's just...
Mm-hmm. Can everyone hear?
So I really like to learn to train with this. It's so prevalent.
Yes, it is. I project if anyone else have that experience.
Well, that's comforting.
Yeah. It's sort of, I think we looked at it a little bit yesterday in group about an attenuation of attention.
Yes, yes.
Right? So to recognize that it is a thing is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. That there's a shape to our relationship with anything. Mm-hmm. There's the absolute enthusiasm for it. And then over time, ego gets its claws into it. And there's a leeching of the energy and the enthusiasm mm-hmm. around it till mm-hmm. it causes us to either hate it or quit, hate mm-hmm. it and or quit, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Or then just in seething resentment, low level
right.
in our interaction.
All of that.
Relationship, long-term relationships, any commitments that we have, that seems to be the shape of the process. So just to recognize that is a first good step.
Okay.
Right?
It seems to find evidence to go to capes that it keeps going along too.
It finds evidence to build a case.
Against whatever it is.
That's right. That's okay. Exactly how it starts, right? Here you are open, you're in love. Everything about, we think, that person or that activity or that experience is what is...
The answer.
The answer. And that's what we're... That's the saving... That's what's going to save us and let us live in the light room forever, right?
Right?
Because
right.
supposedly that's mirroring the experience I'm searching for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the attention, that content becomes the focus of a process of dissatisfaction, an increasing process of dissatisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Until... Yeah, until you don't want to do it anymore.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I understand the instruction about doing a process map and that there can be an intervention at every step.
So there, you understand the encouragement to do a process map and an intervention at every step.
At any step of the
process.
But I still like to learn how to train with it because that hasn't worked.
You would still like to know how to train with it because it hasn't worked.
Well, I still find myself in the same loop.
And you still find yourself in the same loop. And so Judy, what would you like your experience to be?
Well, actually the opposite. I'd like to start with great enthusiasm and just have it build and build and build.
Uh-huh. Yes, you would.
I would.
Right? And so there is an awareness that the attention is on a process that is the exact opposite of that.
Right.
Right. And so then the only way to train with that is every time that you listen to the process that is causing you to feel dissatisfied or resistant to it, it is to be in a process of enthusiasm.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it's sort of very counterintuitive, but that's about the... That's why the clarity of the training objective is important,
uh-huh.
right? I want to be in enthusiasm gives you a very, very clear training objective, which is I need to be in the process of enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
So every time there is, oh, I just don't want to do that, you could pick up the recorder and say, yep, I recognize that process of resistance, what I really wanted, what I love about what I'm doing, why I, what I love about this person, what I love about the relationship, mm-hmm. what I love about what mm-hmm. I'm doing with it, what I'm seeing about it, why I want to keep practicing with it. You could record with enthusiasm about the object, person, activity, experience, or just that you just want to live in enthusiasm.
Uh-huh.
Where it makes that object independent.
Right. That's really what I want.
That's really what it is. Because the understanding of an ego process is it makes it all about the object. Right?
Yes.
The experience, the person, the interaction, that is what's making me feel this way.
Uh-huh.
Rather than it's the absence of this that is making me feel this way. So once we see that it's only the absence of this that is making me feel lit up inside, then we could go straight to just cutting this out.
Okay. And also promotes, what I was doing, promotes the subject-object and separation then, instead of...
Uh-huh. So what you heard, what you're doing is promoting the subject-object relationship and creating the separation. Yeah.
Okay.
We don't need the church between us and God.
Right. Right. Right.
So, it's an interesting thing because we often talk about it as when you love somebody it unconditionally, it means that you have to forgive them for everything that they do.
Mm-hmm.
But really what we're practicing is being in love unconditionally,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very, very different mm-hmm. training objective.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the object.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry used to talk about it at some point as love without object,
mm-hmm.
which is really what we're training for.
Mm-hmm. 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 And also the loving to learn.
And loving to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I do notice that when I get more involved with something, it's more interesting and more interesting, and I'm more engaged, you know, and the separation diminishes.
Right. So when you're much more interested in something and get involved with it,
uh-huh.
you notice that the separation diminishes.
Okay.
Which again, when we look at it from a training perspective, is an important clue. I think it was Eknath Ishwaran who said, if you're bored, pay closer attention.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Because boredom is basically, you know, mm-hmm. ego not being reflected.
Right.
And so if you take a minute, even a second, to just narrow the focus of the attention and start to describe an inch square of grass in front of you,
mm-hmm.
and become so involved in it, you'll be completely fascinated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but what's happening is that the attention is so laser focused on life,
uh-huh.
that there is no room for the conversation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so the engagement is total.
Mm-hmm. It always comes back to the same thing, doesn't it? I mean, I keep, conditioning comes up with all these what about, and it's all about being here, being present.
Yes, it's all about, can you hear? Being here, being present, and there are so many ways to learn to be present, right? Because presence can become, I come back here,
mm-hmm.
which is a mental activity,
mm-hmm.
as we were talking about in meditation with the breath.
Right.
And so the ability to engage with life and get intimate with that process on many, I could do it with love, I could do it with gratitude, I could do it with the specific, I
mm-hmm.
could do it with the cosmic, I start to learn how to be here,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and fall in love with learning how to be here.
Mm-hmm. 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 Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. June.
Well, I'm just don't put your hands up.
Don't put your hands up.
So that was a really interesting conversation. I've had an on again, off again practice of coming back to the breath.
An on again, off again practice of coming back to the breath.
Yes. Largely off again.
Largely off again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to change that.
And you want to change it.
Mm-hmm. I want that to be a deep focus of my practice. The focus of practice for me.
You want it to be the focus of practice for you.
Yes. And I guess the way to do that is to just do it
Yes. I was just going to say, well, there you have the answer to the question. Right?
Yeah.
It's the, you want to become a great golfer?
And a great teacher.
Or go out to the golf course every day.
And?
Find a great teacher. Well, that might, you might have already done, June.
Yes, that.
So, but it becomes a singular focus, mm. right? Everything that we can do to support ourselves in the recollection of that.
Like recording and listening.
Well, like recording and listening, but so I remember some guidance I received around choosing unconditional love, right? And cutting out pieces of paper on every door that says, I choose unconditional love. So if you want the breath to be the focus of my practice, write it on the steering wheel of your car.
Yeah.
In the door, when you open your door.
Mm.
Wherever you want that to be, you want it to be reminded of that every time you sit. And then the training becomes the supporting for that singular focus. No self-hate.
Right. Yes, that's what I've been looking at. You know, I June around all day.
You June around all day.
And there's often the awareness often arises, often that I haven't been present. I've been lost in whatever, something, not present. And so attention comes back closer to the present. And
so you're waking up from the middle room.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And before I know it, I'm gone again.
And before you know it, you're gone again.
And so I've heard, of course, the breath talked about as an anchor.
Yes, the breath is an anchor. Yes. Well, and you'll also hear Sherry talk about how it's a very, unless you're very deeply, a deep practitioner, it's not a very solid anchor. So perhaps coming back and saying, oh, here I am, I'm alive, I'm breathing, yay, or something that anchors it even further.
Okay, and that brings up a kind of lighthearted joy.
Yeah.
Yay, I'm
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
Acknowledge the
yes.
tap on the shoulder.
Acknowledge the tap on the shoulder, yes, and anchor it further, right? So, and then you can put a training structure around it. Because what you're attempting to do is to, first of all, it's important, right? The reason why you want your attention on the breath is not because you want your attention on the breath. You want your attention here.
Yes.
And so if it's just simply attention on the breath, it's a very, it has to be developed as an anchor to presence, right? And so stage one could simply be signs all over your house, and then a timer at certain times of the day where it goes off, and you train the attention to go acknowledge the breath. And so you do that for a week. Then look at how well you've been doing and what you've learned from the process, what you ignore, what you tend not to ignore, what will bring you back, when you're successful, and then recalibrate to your second week of training in terms of how to make coming back here and not wandering off what you're interested in, focusing in mastering as a skill. And take inspiration from something that you've already mastered. How did you approach that? Because I know you did, so.
Every day.
Every day, yes.
All day.
Yes, and I project this, I mean, our subject is unconditional love, and I project that the reason that you never missed a practice session is simply because you loved it so much. So make here tangible.
Say that again.
Make here tangible. Oh, just simply that it's easy. So if you have a particular technique you're working with, to master the technique is a tangible thing. Hmm. Right? I love pottery. So I'm going to learn how, go to pottery class, I'm going to try to practice with the wheel, I'm going to master the consistency of clay. You break it up into a whole bunch of things, but
okay.
There's a love for the thing that is, that, and that's why the breath, coming back here to the present, has to take on some dimension for you to love. Can't be an abstraction. Well, it can, but it's harder to train with. Till you get to that place where you can train with it as an abstraction.
So it seems to me that to be in this practice and not having a pretty thorough going practice of coming to the breath.
Can you hear?
No.
So to be in this practice and not have a pretty
thorough
yes.
Practice
of going to the breath.
Yeah. Is basically out of integrity.
It's basically out of integrity.
With, I guess, with oneself. It's, the term lip service has been just coming to me over and over.
Hopefully not in a self-hating way.
Well, it does have it.
It does have a self-hating
thing. Well, let's see. It doesn't need to, does it?
No, absolutely not. It's very encouraging if you're told, well, do you really want to come here, June? It's the observation without judgment. Perhaps you need to focus on it some more. Yeah. Sherry.
I saw two things in this that I love. One, I tend to be kind of organized.
You tend to be organized?
Yeah, kind
mm-hmm.
of a neat and tidy type. And I thought how fun it would be to essentially hide things from myself. You know, like my toothbrush is in the sock drawer or that sort of thing. Because I just in listening to these conversations, it seems to me like one of the places that ego really has success with the middle room is when we're doing things that we don't have to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one that I thought was fun. It was sort of a variation on the put signs up everywhere.
Huh.
You know, just make sure that I have to really stop and get present to find whatever it is that I'm looking for. And then the other one was something that you mentioned the other day that I hadn't thought about in a long time, and that is that when one of the ways to keep kids from, or to have them think again about how sexual they want to be and how careful they'd like to be about that, it carrying the egg around.
Yeah.
This is what it's like to have a baby, right? and then you keep, you know, dropping your egg and breaking it or leaving it somewhere. And it can, you know, sort of encourage you to consider that you might not be ready for parenting right now. And I thought, well, that would be a fun one too, to have something with me. And so if I'm going to do something that takes two hands, I have to set it down in order to, you know,
pay attention to it.
Bring
yeah.
me back to the breath. And then I have to remember where I set it down. And that's going to bring me back to the breath. So just, you know, playing kind of games with ourselves that make coming back here, coming back to the breath, more entertaining.
Yeah, and it's fun.
It's fun.
It's playful.
Mm-hmm.
It's tangible.
Mm-hmm.
It's novel.
Yes. And I liked your suggestion about do it for a week, check in, see what you learned, and then kind of set the next, what am I going to do for the next week, change it up so that...
Yeah, for me, that's the most fun in learning is you learn about who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what makes you successful, what doesn't make you successful, what you love, what you're drawn to, how your tastes change. Because the training program is constantly being customized to where you are with it.
And it would also, it seems like, have the merit of bringing some awareness to what the first conversation about losing interest and
right.
basically forgetting and getting distracted and winding up in the middle room and not even knowing if you're there.
Right. Well, and to me, as we train with something, as we train with anything, it seems that the training becomes less about having the energy of the first phase of my engagement throughout the process, as that I have the energy to be here regardless of where I'm in the process.
Yeah.
Because what happens to me is not getting addicted to a type of energy. Right? Because that's not the nature of life. Life is always changing. So what I'm training for is actually to be here whatever the undulation. Be all right whether there's enthusiasm or not. Because as I work with something, I can see how it's, I think Chris was talking about yesterday about the light room versus the dark room. It's always the degree of awareness that's there with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when I pay attention and I notice how much awareness there is, if this is not saying it's a problem that awareness is only this much versus this much, that's really what the training is around.
Mm.
Because I project with things that are really, really you're resistant to, you still show up.
Mm-hmm.
But what the conversation in the showing up is, I should be more enthusiastic,
mm-hmm.
or I shouldn't be so resistant.
Mm-hmm.
So at that phase of the process, being all right with that is the training.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I want to bring enthusiasm to this process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you don't learn that till you start at a place of, I want to be in a process of enthusiasm,
yeah.
unconditionally.
Yeah. Yeah. But I want to be enthusiastic about finding my toothbrush in my sock.
That's right. Or I want to be enthusiastically frustrated that I can't find it.
Good point.
That one I learned from you.
Thank you.
Deepa.
Thank you. This is a great segue for the question that I think is...
great segue to the... Can you hear?
Yeah.
Because there is a belief that enthusiasm or being in the light room should look a certain way. And so this middle room option is a great bucket to put something in just so that I can look at it. And so I had guidance this morning, and there was a confirmation in guidance that of the wisdom in the heart, and that so the voice is that should put me in the light room, because the guidance was in confirmation with the still small voice. But it was a sobering confirmation. I mean, the content gets billed as sobering. This is not, it's not happiness to be right.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Well,
and
it isn't. So that's true.
So,
yeah.
And I've heard you talk about calibrating to the quality of presence. So I've seen in my practice the movement that when I get here, after I've been gone, training with, oh, yeah, it's great I'm here, instead of, oh no, I was gone.
Right.
So keep practicing with the, but now I'm back.
Mm-hmm.
To enjoy that, to be in enjoyment of that. But somehow there is a flavor put on top of it, that the enthusiasm or being confirmed that your still small voice was guiding you in the right direction, whatever the content may be billed as, oh, this is sobering news for you, Deepa, is where I am with my practice, in that middle room place. That's what I'm translating the middle room as. There is a, not that, in a way, there is a resistance to, this is not what it should look like.
Right. So the, there, if I'm tracking what you're saying, did everyone hear, or would you like me to reflect?
Yeah. No, wait.
Yeah. So the place where you are in practice is the flavor that's being put on, or the middle room place around, this is not how it should look like. So there's a recognition that there's a conversation even after confirmation, right? The big, because it starts with what you said. The light room has to look a particular way. So even if there's confirmation of an intuition, well, that's great, and it doesn't look the way it should.
What's great, but?
Great, but. Yeah. Well, what dropped in when you said that, right, Deepa, is, to me, it's the quote from Sherry about, you don't have to be okay with how it is, you have to be, what is it? You have to be with
don't
it.
Don't ask me.
Jen, we.
Is it, you don't have to like.
You don't have to. You don't have to be okay with it. You just have to be with it.
With it.
Right.
To be here with it. Is that what it is?
To be here with it. Be yeah. here with it. Thanks, Chris. And I project. I don't know this, but for me, the enthusiasm, if there's anything, any flavor of that, is the moment of alignment. It's the moment of the confirmation, right? The still small voice, because the there's something wrong is just simply being out of alignment. And the recalibration that you're talking about is the training to recognize alignment as your happiness or equivalent to enthusiasm, rather than the flavor that is supposed to go with it. Because you're not aligning to that. In fact, it's a lack of alignment that feels, that is your dissatisfaction, right? Because you can't align with dissatisfaction. You can only be dissatisfied in it. But that's also that place of stopping and recognizing that that's where I am.
I think what I'm hearing is, and I have those moments of sometimes, not, but what I think, how I'm understanding this is that moment is fleeting, and the voice that comes immediately afterwards is what is overlaying whatever it needs to look like, or this is not right, or the flavor is not. But I'm missing that moment of alignment, and resting, I'm missing resting in that moment of alignment.
Right.
Because it's too quick to judge what it should look like and what it means.
Right. And there is a resting in the awareness of the judgment, which is a different flavor of awareness than in resting in the awareness of the still small voice. But there is the awareness that both are simply resting. That's what we start to recalibrate to, right? Because as soon as I'm aware that, oh, this is a sobering ha-ha, yes, it's a sobering ha-ha. It's not wrong that it's a sobering ha-ha, whatever, right?
And that's very helpful what you just clarified, is I don't have to like it.
You don't have to like it.
It doesn't
right.
have to look a certain way. I don't need to. So the Disney version is what needs to be suppressed. Or suddenly there's rainbows and stars and violence, and so that there is a, I mean, there's an increasing movement away from that. There is an increasing recognition that what the definition of karma, which is on the, I love that, it's what something I think is supposed to look like, and a recognition.
Yeah.
But what is really helpful is I don't have to like it.
Yes. So I this might be slightly off topic, but the quote from one of our spiritual heroes is that the person remains in restlessness and resistance forever.
A person remains in resistance.
Right, because the person is what you're liberating from. The person is never liberated. That's the ego sense that is in restlessness and resistance is untouchable, because it is resistance and restlessness.
Mm.
So when I'm aware of that, I'm free, because I'm not that. And so there's some peace that we have to get to calibrate to, that the freedom is from the person, not off the person. Okay.
So I'm hearing the not to ask this because it's too simple, which is the exact process that I'm looking at.
Uh-huh.
And so there's sort of, I'm curious about how to train with something. So I see sort of three facets to it.
Everyone can hear, Tony?
Mm-hmm.
Three facets to what is supposed to be really simple. Go ahead, Kate.
So, well, one process that happens a lot is the need to get it right. And then the flip side of that, that is often really unspoken, is fear of what's going to happen if I get it wrong, like fear of punishment or fear of something that's just lurking that never is really defined. And then it sort of feels like I choose unconditional love feels like sort of the antidote or the way of working with that. But I wanted to get some guidance on how to really train with it. Like, is it all, I guess where I'm a little stuck, is it all one process? Is it, do I want to pick either the fear, the need to get it right, the fear of getting it wrong, and just map those specifically, or am I practicing with I choose unconditional love, like, and then it gets really complicated.
Mm. Uh-huh. Say a little bit more about your practice of choosing unconditional love. Like, what is that in, so if there are three components, I understand the first two. Say a little bit more about the third.
Well, I mean, it's something that I practice with in a lot of different ways. So, like, I'll have signs around, I'll set alarms, I will,
uh-huh.
do readings, like, different ways.
But what does that mean for you when you say, I choose unconditional love? Or help you with?
Being here,
uh-huh.
letting go of the story that there's a right way, wrong way.
Uh-huh.
So
it does antidote the process.
Yeah, it feels like it kind of comes in at the end often. Like something could happen, it all gets triggered. It feels like it could be in the process map where eventually it can kind of loop around, like sometimes early on, sometimes much later on.
Uh-huh.
So
if I'm hearing you correctly, it's a recovery place, the choice for unconditional love.
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh.
And that's
so
an interesting
what
way of putting it, so I'll have to look.
Because that's the moment of awareness, right? You suddenly come to awareness at some point in the process map, and you direct your attention to unconditional love, which brings you firmly grounded to here. And if I'm hearing you correctly, and I don't know if this is what you're saying, what you want is the attention on the unconditional love somewhere in the middle of the process, not at the end of it.
Right, yes.
Right? We want to be in unconditional love, and then if we watch the attention go to fear or watch the attention go to doing it right, I want to return to unconditional love rather than be gone and recover and come back to unconditional love. Would that be how you're looking at it?
I think so. I think so, because when in the going away, there's a, it feels like there's like the mind activity about those things, but there's also the physical toll that
mm-hmm.
the, that can take in being in that place
mm-hmm.
where it feels the separate from what middle place or dark
uh-huh.
room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason I'm attempting the clarification, right, Kate, is to understand, is to get a sense of what it is that you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so you asked about doing a process map around doing it right or the fear. The reason to do a process map is to get very, very familiar with the terrain of the mind during a particular process so that you can recognize that you're in that terrain when you're in it.
Mm.
So if you know you have a process that's a blob
mm.
and you don't know that you're in any part of that process, that's when you want to unpack it. Not necessarily to understand the process of right
mm.
or understand the component of being afraid
mm.
as much as that's all I know about it. And so I can't actually recognize when I'm in it because I am not clear about all of the components of it. But if you're clear about the components of it, then at any point in the process, redirecting to unconditional love, whatever
mm.
that means to you, if it truly antidotes that feeling and interrupts your process, then you don't really need to go into those areas, right?
Okay. I think that gives me some direction, and I'm just going to sit with that some more.
Okay, and let's keep having the conversation.
Yeah, because I think I know the process maybe more than it wants me to say I know the process, because
mm-hmm.
it's very familiar, and I often wake up at different points in it and
uh-huh.
can redirect. So
right. maybe it just wants your attention on
yeah I think
on
that's
on that place, right? Whereas the unconditional love route, there's no church between, we don't need to be mediated, is basically the answer to unconditional love. I don't want to be in the mind. I don't want to figure it out. I don't want to have a relationship with it. I don't want to be interested in it. I don't want it to have any of my attention. So as soon as I know that I'm in it, I'm going to redirect, have my attention on something else, on what I choose. Now, it can feel very sticky to do that. And part of what we can train with there is escalating levels of energy and attention on your choice to counter the energy of the circuit. So if I'm really in it, just saying I choose unconditional love may not get me out of the process. There you have to dance or run or climb a tree or something like that in order to be able to really redirect the attention and embody unconditional love. If it's a passing thought, you might be able to redirect the attention by simply turning your attention to a flower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was sort of a calibrating to a matching of the energy that's
yeah.
happening. Okay. That's really helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Steph, and then Laura.
Just to give a little bit of context, earlier this week I was in Orcas Island with my husband for a 15th anniversary, and we went to this place called the Gottman Institute. It's these famous doctors who study relationships and give couples, it was a fun retreat, you know, give couples exercises and all of that. And he's been studying, you know, he's probably in his latter 70s, he's been a scientist for years and years and years, and he said, you know, the one thing he can't figure out is this. There's a phenomenon where things will work for couples, you know, like he gives you a big book of all these exercises to do and questions to ask each other to go deeper in your relationship. And he said things are going really well, and then couples just stop doing it, and then, you know, they end up in trouble or divorced. And it really got me thinking about I mean, as individuals too, we do that all the time, right? People you see in recovery or things are going great and then all of a sudden they drink or do drugs or what have you, and we do it all the time with anything in our lives, you know, things are going great, practice is going great, and all of a sudden we just stop. And it really got me thinking about, you know, egocentric karmic conditioning, which is having it talking us out of these things that are clearly working for us and making our lives better and our relationships better, and the aspect that they play in every part.
Yes.
Yeah, the, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, and I would project that it's not sudden.
Right.
Because it's a process of erosion.
Mm-hmm. It's erosion, yes. I
right?
See.
It's an attrition of love through a constant, almost like a pinprick. Little
right.
bit. Here's the leech of the energy. Here's a thought. Here's the one. It's a very screw tape letters kind of. I don't know if you've read the C.S. Lewis screw tape letters, but the here we are absolutely open to. I mean, it's an allegory, right?
Mm-hmm.
The devil is, and his minions. He has a bunch of minions, and one of the trainee novices out there, and his uncle is helping him try to convert this guy from a Christian to being atheistic or on the other side,
right?
And so giving him all these tips as to how to go from being in relationship to authenticity to being in relationship to ego. But that is a that is really what's going on. Because if we look at anything that we lose interest in, it's a process of having our attention diverted by a conversation, like Chinese torture. Right? Drip, 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 drip. And then suddenly, before you know it, the size of the animosity and the resistance and the aversion you're surprised by, because you haven't noticed it all along the way. But it is that separation, right, from that which we love. So it's actually not surprising, because if we study how it happens in anything, it's a very predictable thing. It happens all, I mean, we can see it happen all the time, and it is predictable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Gurdjieff. I can't remember, but they've arced the frequency resonance of that over different relationships or whatever it is. And there is a period of time where the resistance is the highest. And if you can spend X number of beats past that resistance, then you're going to stay in the relationship or stay in the interaction or stay in the experience. It happens as a transformation, because the resistance can't alter the love in the interaction of the relationship. That solidifies over and above the amplitude of the resistance. So just to stay that beat more.
Right.
I think in a version of Buddhism, they call that a commitment to the teacher, where no matter what happens, whatever the experience, you will stay in the relationship to your teacher. It's a wisdom of no escape commitment. So that is non-negotiable. But that allows you to get past whatever that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is doing to you. To keep that commitment. That becomes more important than anything else, right?
It goes back to unconditional love.
It goes back to find the unconditional, because you're tested at every level of the condition. And at every level of the condition, you do not choose the exit. Zones of annihilation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Marianne.
So,
Laura, and then
Marianne.
Go ahead, Laura.
Oh, that's,
It is always hard to put on my hands.
Well, absolutely.
Always hard what?
To put up her hands. Oh. One hand is good enough, Laura. Go ahead.
That last piece that you just said really touched me. And I have a ton of gratitude for, like, that seems to be what keeps me here.
Keeps you here
that
in the moment?
One state, like, having not left practice.
Yes.
I can't explain it, you know?
It's not, because from an outside looking in, it doesn't feel, it's like, why?
Right.
Yeah, but it's an unanswerable why.
Yeah, and one that I don't need answered. Everything feels like this. I mean, it's all the same process, but this piece around when, let's see, how to I don't even know how to start. In my last guidance, there was a reflection that I got, and one of the things, as I've been recording the last couple of days, there's a pattern that I see that I will, let's see, there's a identity that will show up that responds as if I know what is being said, and then as I sit with it, God, I don't know how to explain. As I sat with it, my experience, it's like a triple effect. So at first there's this response as if, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. And then as I sit with it, there's really more of a perplexed, kind of like the dog that tilts its head, you know, like. And then when I was recording this morning, what I saw was like, it speaks to what I wrote in the exercise this afternoon was the wisdom, the light was never harmed. And so that there is a knowing, but it's not the identification of a knowing. It's a
sobering, still small voice.
Yeah. The resonance of, like the gratitude to be in a place that can mirror that. To give me the opportunity to not only live in the ego narrative, and so there's an experience of both being afraid of it, which I know is ego, but there's a fear of it and a craving of it at the same time, and a place I've been. I recently took up, which has nothing to do with this, but I recently took up a self-defense course because I'm wanting to put myself in a place where I can access this rage that has been repressed forever. And I can't, every time I get an opportunity to do it, like there's a collapse. And that's the experience I have even when I am in touch with like the love of guidance. And I don't know what to say about that. It's just this place of, I don't know, seeing.
Yes, that's exactly what was dropping in. There's a place of seeing, right? And if I'm seeing a lot, it sounds like, right? There's a, first of all, coming to a practice structure is in itself I mean, if we knew what we were going to see within the practice structure, we wouldn't arrive. But because we can't, we put ourselves into it, right? And then all the mirrors that are held up for us, we get to see a whole bunch of things that we couldn't face. And I project what the conclusion of that, right, Laura, is that you don't have to do anything. I see the wisdom, the light that was never heard. I see the ego narrative. I see gratitude for whatever I know that I trust will keep me in this process with all of these mirrors. I can even see what collapses in the face of the love that is reflecting that innocence for me.
Right.
The possibility of not living in the ego narrative.
Right. Yeah, and as I've been sitting with this karma around not being able to ask for what I want, all of that kind of stuff, what I'm is really practicing not going to a thinking about it, but really just like, it's like a little kid like attempting to like explore a playground, right? I haven't ever had modeling of like what I get from the guide, like that clear, just no nonsense. And I think that there's so much karma around make do.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's so much karma. So, sorry about this, Laura, but the calculus equation drops in
front. Oh, yeah.
Well, but it's that whole thing about limit approaching infinity.
Uh-huh.
But that's exactly what we're practicing. There is something in me that is that clarity, right? That is why what mirrors that clarity is recognized, appreciated, acknowledged. I recognize it, but I'm not able to embody it.
Yes.
For me, which is why it's embodied for me. So I can model myself on accessing that clarity.
Yeah.
They talk about it in Hinduism as the inner guru and the outer guru, right? Mm-hmm. Till you can find your inner guru, the outer guru will be there for you. Because it summons forth what you need to become. Mm. And that process can take lifetimes. But there's gratitude that I'm in that process. Yeah, and as you're exploring the playground, it will drop in because it's been modeled for you.
Hmm.
How you can embody it when you're ready. And until then, we're the chickpea with that cook hitting us with a spoon to say, get back in the pot, you're being seasoned for a different time.
Just so much deepness in this space.
Mm.
So I just want to ask about unconditional love, because I feel like I had a kind of a narrow imagining of it. And so in terms of a process, what could I do to because it feels like it's kind of amorphous.
Uh-huh. So what is your narrow focus of unconditional love?
That this too is accepted.
And what would imagine that to be narrow, Marissa, forgive me. What would imagine that to be narrow?
I guess because I feel like there is so much going on in this space that I go, wow, just hearing these light from different points of the net, going, maybe I should check this out. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I would say this too. It's the same process, right, that you just said, which is this too. Because I project that what you're is in the vastness of not knowing, and accepting that as that.
Okay.
Yeah?
I guess that's because ego likes to know.
Right. To be specific or narrow.
Yeah. I really appreciated all these process groups because it is because it's recorded, because it's something that I can go back and listen to again and again, because there just seems to be so much wealth of wisdom, and I don't know, just I'd like to absorb it like rain.
And I project that is really what you're pointing to as the experience of being expanded, right? That sort of, there's an intuition of, I have an experience of this, and there's so much more to it. And the answer is yeah. And I'm sitting here having that experience, and I'm going to continue to be expanded.
Okay.
Thank you. Sherry.
May I say something about unconditional love for the record?
Please.
In my experience, it's an experience like no other. And that is because when we choose unconditional love, when we turn attention to that simple sentence, I choose unconditional love, that's all that's necessary. We don't have to know anything about it. We don't have to figure anything out. We don't have to understand it. We don't have to feel anything. We don't have to anything. That's our part. Our part is simply to affirm that choice. And all the rest will be done for us. Mm. And the thing that to me makes it so wonderful, well, the many things that make it so wonderful, because there is no doing in it, there's just nothing to fix, nothing, you know, there's no process in it. Mm. There is simply affirming what we choose to be our experience, our life. And that's what happens. And if we consider it, we know that to be true because that has been the way it's been from day one. We have been affirming exactly what we have. And trying to have that lead us to something different. So we know the process intimately, I think, so it takes us a while to put the two together. And so I just want to put that out, because what egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate wants to do with something like that is make it into something. It's like it's a project now. It's a self-improvement program, or it's gonna do. And that's not it.
There was so much nuance in it, Trey, that I'm not gonna reflect that. I'm glad it's recorded.
Me too. Thank you.
Pasha. I'm sorry, is group till 4 or 4:15? Does anyone know?
Tomorrow is at 4:15, so...
Oh, so group must go to 4:15.
Excellent. Go ahead, Pasha.
Well, hearing that what I see. I did the newspaper with articles in the, and for me, the big title is "Figure It Out."
Uh-huh. And here's the direct guidance not to.
Yes. And I see what I've been practicing is I choose figuring it out. I choose understanding. I choose knowledge. I choose making sense. And it's just such a kind of like behind belief that I'm constantly acting it out without even questioning. Why is it I do this?
Well, yeah. It doesn't question itself, right? It just does it.
Yes, it's just, here is the thing, let's go figure it out, you know. Comes with a lot of stories for future, what's upcoming, what's new, I need to figure it out. What happened in the past? What happened? I need to figure it out. I have this kind of like witness stories playing in my head about the past, kind of explaining me. And one more time, I did forgot to put the towel. Okay, why I'm hearing it again? So I'm trying to figure out like and why did I do that? And where did I miss it? And belief is that once I figure it out, then comes what? I don't even know what.
Well, and I don't know if this is where you're going with it. The reason to do a newspaper like this and have a headline like this is important to put it out there to recognize it as a process, right?
Now we can see it.
Yes.
It's printed.
Yes, it's printed. But it's not so much that I'm trying to figure it out, because that process that you're talking about is really, I mean, the Buddha talks about what is the mind? Sensations, perceptions, feeling, possession, all of the attributes that you're talking about, it's focused on the past or on the future, it's repetition, it's memory, it's knowledge, it's me. And so just being able to, even in a simple exercise like that, the fundamental truth that you're looking at is the truth of what the Buddha looked at when he looked at the mind. It is what, that's what it does.
Yes.
And as long as the attention is on it, that's going to be our experience, whatever the nature of it.
Yeah, as long as the attention kind of inside of it,
yes.
As I'm looking at unconditional love, I'm trying to figure out what is it.
Yes.
And I'm not noticing how I am in the process of figuring it out.
That's exactly right. You said it perfectly. There is no awareness within it that it's operating.
Yes.
And yet, we could bring the awareness can be there in from a different perspective. Right?
Yes, yes.
As soon as you put it out in newsprint, what witnesses it now knows how to recognize it. That's why we do process maps.
Yes, and also I have experience of unconditional love being here, and there was no need
figuring
of
it out.
You're figuring it out. There was no because figuring it out is always kind of like ongoing effort. But in unconditional love, in my experience, there was no ongoing effort. It was simple, quiet, here, receiving everything, nothing to figure out. But it's for me, it's almost like a child who in a place and forgot the time, or you know, crosses the boundary, and it's just bringing him back in with that love for the child, understanding, oh, okay, you get lost again, it's okay, you know, here we are, let's start from here.
Yeah, the conscious, compassionate awareness that is always able to notice when the attention has wandered and bring it back. June.
practicing being with the breath, because I want to feel like she has integrity. This is the point.
Practicing because I want to practicing focus on the breath because I want to feel an integrity is missing the point. They say just sit.
Just sit and breathe and notice.
Well, and I project that we all begin somewhere, right?
Okay, it's time to begin. After 43 years.
Always. Back again at one.
Yeah.
Well, and it's important to recognize that place I project you're pointing us to. There is life longing for itself, whatever we want to call that, unconditional love, or unconditional love in search of unconditional love. You can't say that's being in integrity with myself.
You can or can't.
You can say.
Yeah.
However I say it, that expresses the motivation to return attention to what one truly is.
Yeah.
That declaration can be out there, or I mean as far away from what it actually is, and then I move towards it. I mean, there's a reason that for 40 years you've done this practice. We're always approaching integrity. The only reason not to frame it that way is because it can be used to set up standards to make you suffer.
Yeah.
I really liked what you said earlier, which feels connected, and I'm probably going to misquote you, but that we don't come back to the breath to come back to the breath, we come back to the breath to be here.
Yeah.
Right? So that feels like kind of a way out of the standard.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there always is one.
Yeah.
According to ego. And yeah, I really appreciated the exercise today, and I had this fun awareness as we were leaving group yesterday. You know, we were talking about sameness. You know, in the middle it's same, so we don't have to pay attention, but if we're present, if we're in the light room, it's everything's always constantly new. And I realize ego has this opinion of practice, and you mentioned it today about boring. It's always the same thing, you know, and
mm-hmm.
it's so boring, and it just made me laugh, because of course it would take the very thing that's the most alive and call it sameness. I mean, talk about a projection. I just saw that right now.
Mm-hmm. You saw the projection that ego is the same all the time.
Yeah, but it projects that on practice, right? Because you were talking about the, I don't know whether you said the undulations, but you know, whether we get excited and then we're not excited and all that, and that kind of predictable place of, from ego, of I don't want to do practice, this is boring.
Yes. Yeah, the predictable place. It's an attenuation that happens to everything.
Yeah.
Right? And so going back to group yesterday, where I think there was a discussion of someone saying, I'm inspired by the guide living here in every moment. I think that's what it takes, right? For it not to be the same.
Yeah, so it's a clue that I'm not here.
That's right.
It's the same, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's all it is. It's a clue that I'm not here.
Yeah.
Which is what we begin to recognize, ultimately.
Yes, and you know, one of the things I saw in the exercise today is this subtle judgment of from ego, and again, what a wonderful projection, that it's always supposed to look, you know, the attention is supposed to always be the same, but it's not, of course. And so then that means there's something wrong, but of course it's going to fluctuate and change and be different. And being aware of that, the attention is on the fluctuation.
There's a particular projection of how it needs to be, and then when it's not that, a judgment about it. Would that reflect that? There's something wonderful that dropped in that then dropped out with the helicopter. So can't remember what it was, sorry. All right. Deepa, did you have something?
If there is time.
There is. We have 3 minutes before we end group.
Thank you. Only because I'm hearing that I shouldn't. Also because I'm hearing that I shouldn't. Because when the focus was on unconditional love, the clarification from the guide a few minutes ago was very helpful, because the voice that I was hearing ever since this was introduced was, that has nothing to do with me. I don't know what that is. I don't have any access to it. I'd better train with that sort of resistance to what is unconditional love. And when I was listening to a group recording, that love is not a feeling, and so then I have no idea what that is. So I'm not going to engage that sort of response. And I've also heard the guide mention before about I see that's why the fog comes in real heavy, because I'm not meant to see it. Mm-hmm. Is that you're living the life that you're affirming, or what you have is what you've affirmed, which always I would. There was a resistance to that, because then it meant that I had to take responsibility for the life that, because somehow I don't want to use the word manifested it, but I somehow brought it into being by the strength or the weakness of my thoughts, however that gets spun. So as a koan practice for this to wash over me, it feels really helpful just to say I choose unconditional love, even though the conversation is, I don't know what that means. I could say any gibberish number of words because I don't know what this means. So that I wanted to put that out there because I don't.
And I think that, go ahead.
Well, so I choose unconditional love. So does anybody else have anything going that you hear when I say that? Yeah, what? Jen, what?
Yeah, well, that same kind of place of what is that, and am I having that experience?
Yeah, okay,
and yeah,
so I choose unconditional love.
Okay. That's what we, yeah.
Anything else?
Tony, I'll forget, because I've said several times I wanted to say it over and over and over, and then it falls away. I choose unconditional love.
Anybody else?
I mean,
it is the closest to one size fits all that we're ever going to do. Whatever it is that's going on.
Judy.
Well, how do I get it? What do I have to do?
Choose.
I choose
unconditional love. Jude.
The editor takes it and says, well, unconditional is redundant. I mean, love. Love, 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 love.
And so?
I choose unconditional love.
I mean, truly, it's boring.
That's
stupid. Unconditional love. It's stupid. I choose unconditional love. Well, what's going to happen to me? Yeah, I choose unconditional love. And I'll tell you what will happen to you if you'll do it. Okay? You get really happy.
Oh.
You get really happy because it just puts paid to everything that ego's got going. Whatever it wants you to feel, think, turn your attention to, whatever it's got going. Yeah. I choose unconditional love.
I choose unconditional love.
I choose unconditional love. Yeah. And because, you know, it's not. The next place that ego's going to go, of course, is, well, that's just a cop-out.
Right.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's, come on, you're choosing, come on. But a synonym for that is, I'm choosing life.
Mm.
I'm choosing the intelligence that animates.
Mm.
I'm choosing the moment. I'm choosing the alarm. I'm choosing this here now. I don't want to be somewhere else.
Mm.
I don't want to be in small mind horse pucky about something that's not here and now.
Mm.
I don't want to do that.
Wow.
I want to choose unconditional love. That's code for this.
Mm.
Right here, right now, this moment. This is what I choose.
Mm.
And if we pair it with, oh, okay, what now, life?
Mm-hmm.
Then we're right here where we want to be.
Yeah.
So it's not a cop out. It's not avoiding taking responsibility. It is the actual deepest, truest spiritual response that we can ever come up with.
Mm-hmm.
If God walked in, we would want to say, "Yes, God." Yeah. And that's what that is. Divinity walks in the room and we're saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
Divinity walks into the room and we're saying yes. I choose it.
I choose it. I choose divinity right here, right now. Yeah. It's just easier to say than, you know, divinity walked in, just walked in. and I said yes. It's a whole conversation.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.